ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். த டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் ஸ்ட்ரென்தனிங் ஹிந்துவிசம், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Related point came to mind this morning, and we have a situation where our membership, many of our members are taking care of elderly parents one way or another, either live in, the parents are living with them, or they're visiting them regularly and interacting quite a lot. And so I get memos in all the time about this subject. Please give me advice about taking care of my parents. So here's one message that came in recently requesting advice, slightly edited to keep the person anonymous. The doctor has put Dad on an even stronger pain medication. He spends his days in bed. He is very, very depressed. I pray daily that I can brighten his day in some small way. I offer to massage him. Sometimes he is open, and sometimes he just wants to be left alone. Please put him in your thoughts and prayers. My husband and I try very hard to care for him in the best way we know how. I most times feel that it is never enough, never good enough, because Dad is so closed down, so critical and angry. I continually look for ways to give and to serve each day. Please offer advice and encouragement. Sound familiar? Definite problem where the parent is in a negative state of mind to one degree or another and refuses to budge from that state of mind no matter what the children do, just determined to remain negative and critical and unhappy, which frustrates those who are taking care of the person because they want that not to be the case. So here was the advice. Regarding advice in caring for your father-in-law, it is enough to do the kindly act. If it is appreciated or not from a karmic point of view doesn't matter. You are creating good karma by fulfilling dharma. So that was the advice. In other words, don't expect the person to be other than depressed, you know, which is depressing you. The person's remaining depressed, father or mother. So you're discouraged because what you're doing isn't changing that. So that's frustrating yourself unnecessarily because what you're doing is all you can do. You can't change a lifetime of mental habits of a person just by smiling and being nice. And the person is who he or she is. All you can do is your duty. Do it to the best of your ability. If the person is uplifted and smiles because of it or remains grumpy and depressed, you can't let that be the measure of your success. The measure of success is doing the duty in the first place, doing it the best you can, doing it with love. That's all you can do. You've earned lots of good karma by that simple action. So that ties into happiness in the sense that you don't want to let another's unhappiness take away your happiness. It's okay for you to be happy even though the parent isn't happy, even though you're in the same house. You know, it's not against the rules to smile and laugh and joke around just because the parent won't. You know, you can't let it be contagious, that sense of negativity and depression and criticalness, if they have that, because you're not able to do anything about it, but it shouldn't ruin the mood of everyone else in the family, and they shouldn't feel that they're not doing their best. So this applies to everything we do for others in life. Take the same principle. Sometimes parents get discouraged because they do the best they can with their children, and the children don't respond in the way that seems at all reasonable to what they're doing to try and help. And so the parents don't feel good. Gee, child didn't respond to all my good advice, all my love and attention, still doing the same old stupid things, you know. The parent feels sad. But why should you feel sad? You've done your duty. You've done the best you can. You've earned good karma by doing the right thing in a loving way. So you can't let the person's response discourage you or take away from your own happiness. You have to learn to be happy just by doing the right thing, regardless of if someone takes the advice or not. Imagine Gurudeva. He gave so much advice over the years. If he was unhappy every time someone didn't take his advice, he'd be terribly unhappy, right? So we always have to look to Gurudeva and see how he did it. He was the master of these kinds of insights into life. And definitely he would just give the advice, and regardless of if the person took it or not, remained unhappy, became happy, whatever, Gurudeva was Gurudeva. His consciousness wasn't moved by the person's response. So we need to be the same way, because it influences us more than we realize. We get burdened more than we realize by other people's responses to our good intentions. And that takes away from our happiness. So we don't want to take away from our own happiness. There's no reason we can't be happy, even if others aren't, that surround us. Om Namah Shivaya. Tomorrow, Arumuga Swami and I are leaving for Singapore and Malaysia for a trip of 9 days, which includes 3 satsangs. We have a satsang with the Singapore mission, then one with the Malaysia members in Klang, and then a small one in Sungai Petani for those in the north, satsang. And all of those will be stressing the Vasana Daha Tantra, finishing up the Maha Vasana Daha Tantra for those who haven't. We have some members who stalled, shall we say, midway, as well as we have some new members who haven't even started. So we'll be encouraging all of them to work on that this year, as well as everyone can do the Vasana Daha Tantra, the annual one, in all 6 parts for last year. Particularly with Gurudeva's passing, it's a year that's very important to write down in detail and clear that all out of the subconscious mind. We're also speaking at the evening cultural event for Iravan Day, which is a big display of all the facets of Iravan Temple in downtown Kuala Lumpur, and speaking at a Ganesha Temple in Penang, and the talk there is a simple one called My Friend Lord Ganesha, portraying Lord Ganesha as a real being who we can become quite close to. We also have a seminar for the young adults who are all enthusiastic about teaching the Master Course. They have a Master Course seminar program there. And so all the teachers, some 15 or 20 of them, will be gathering for a morning seminar. And they've got a long list of questions about how to present different subjects from merging with Shiva. So that'll be very interesting. And then we could call it the main event is the Hindu Renaissance 2, the second rally on Hindu Renaissance organized by the Malaysia Hindu Sangam. The first one was in last November and was a Tamil language event. This one is the English language event, and we're honored to be one of the key speakers. Our talk is at event is from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. and our talk is 8:40 to 9:10. Good time slot there for Hindu Renaissance. So today you are honored to hear the Hindu Renaissance 2 talk. So you have to pretend you're in a big stadium or something. It's called the Chinese Assembly Hall. Big place, a few thousand people. So, of course, we'll start out with the, you have to honor everyone, right? The president and the swamis and all the dignitaries present have to be honored in Asian style. So once we get through all of that, we'll start Vanakkam and Namaste. We are pleased to be with you all today to celebrate and advance the renaissance of Hinduism, a faith shared by nearly one-sixth of the human family. Just 2 months ago, we completed the one-year commemoration of our beloved Satguru Sivaji Subramanya Swami's Maha Samadhi. He left us with so many gifts, so much wisdom. He was at the vanguard of the modern Hindu Renaissance, reaching out to Hindus of all persuasions through the magazine Hinduism Today, dedicated to uplifting and informing and dispelling myths about the world's oldest faith, and through his periodic travel lecture tours to countries where Hindus live. One of the themes at the global gatherings that Gurudeva attended over the last decade for world peace and the welfare of the planet, held at Oxford, Moscow, and Rio de Janeiro, was think globally, act locally. This adage certainly applies to today's gathering, in that though we are focused on catalyzing among Malaysian Hindus a renaissance that manifests an increased knowledge of the Sanatana Dharma and greater service to our fellow Hindus, the need is actually a global one. Hindu communities around the world have the same problems that exist in Malaysia. Therefore, Hindu communities can learn from each other's efforts in dealing with their common problems and see what the solutions are that other communities have developed. I thought you would be interested to hear a message I wrote to the devotees of a Hindu temple in Ontario, Canada last November, which just as well could have been written for an event in Malaysia. Greetings to all who are attending the first annual Mahasamadhi Guru Puja of Satguru Sivaji Subramanya Swami today, November 2nd, 2002, at the Richmond Hill Temple, Ontario, Canada. I believe if Gurudeva were sitting with you today, he would strongly encourage you to make the major priority educating the children in the religious practices and philosophy of Hinduism. He would encourage you to show them how the Sanatana Dharma will make them happier and more successful individuals. Gurudeva would suggest you involve them in the leadership of temple activities by having them form youth committees and giving them specific responsibilities at the different festivals to develop the feeling that this is their temple, not just a temple for the adults. Today in the West, which just as well could read today in Malaysia, many Hindu parents and Hindu religious leaders are appalled by the lack of interest that Hindu youth who have reached adulthood show in their religion. The best prevention for this problem, as well as the problem of conversion to another religion, is providing children a solid education in the beliefs and practices of their Hindu traditions. An excellent place to start is by teaching children Hinduism's code of conduct, the 10 yamas, restraints, and the 10 niyamas, observances, as they provide the foundation necessary for a sustained spiritual life. Gurudeva explains this beautifully in his book, Living with Shiva. Quote, "Religion teaches us how to become better people, how to live as spiritual beings on this earth. This happens through living virtuously, following the natural and essential guidelines of Dharma. For Hindus, these guidelines are recorded in the yamas and niyamas, ancient scriptural injunctions for all aspects of human thought, attitude, and behavior. In Indian spiritual life, these Vedic restraints and observances are built into the character of children from an early age." The fact that this message, without any editing, speaks equally well to the situation in Malaysia, as in Canada, shows us that indeed we can all benefit in solving this problem by following the adage, think globally, act locally. Hinduism is a mind stratum within people, and to keep that mind stratum vibrant and contemporary, it needs regular attention, maintenance and renewal from time to time. We are currently in such an age of renewal, or renaissance concerned with the health of this great mind stratum. We can compare the health of Hinduism to the health of the human body. Disease can be significantly reduced by focusing on strengthening the body's immune system through vitamins, herbs, proper diet, exercise, and living a balanced life. A weak body with a poor immune system is much more susceptible to disease, which is in fact a natural part of life. Gurudeva often observed that to combat conversion, we must strengthen Hinduism through education. If we look at Hinduism as a living organism, we can see that educating its adherents is like building up weak muscles through exercise, or sensibly remedying other forms of weakness, be they physical, mental, or emotional. In other words, the problems that beset Hinduism can be reduced by strengthening the knowledge Hindus have about their religion. Alien influences, such as enticements for converting to other faiths or the allurements of Western materialism, will simply have little impact on thriving, confident, well-informed Hindu individuals and communities. In other words, we can take the same approach to Hinduism as we do to health of the physical body. Rather than become sick and then cure the sickness with various remedies, prevent the sickness from even occurring by strengthening Hinduism through education, as we do the physical body's immune system through health-conscious practices. Around the world, Hindus are more and more becoming aware of the need for religious education as they see their children and their children's children drifting away from Hinduism. Educating Hindus in the basics of their faith must be done from an early age. We have met many youth who have been brought up with such knowledge, who have been educated in their faith and raised wisely and kindly by caring, compassionate parents. They are bright, enthusiastic, dedicated, devout Hindus. They are proud to call themselves Hindus, certainly not ashamed of their faith, and certainly not susceptible to conversion from other forms of thought. They are maturing into stable, productive, contributing members of society. This is the hope of the future. We have the models. Many of them are standing up even now and teaching others about Hinduism. Perhaps these young missionaries are one of the most potent forces we have in providing education to strengthen Hinduism. They should be brought forward and encouraged. It is interesting to note that yesterday our major activity was holding a seminar for a group of young adults who are holding seminars in Gurudeva's teachings in the Klang area. The focus was on how to present certain key points most effectively and how to answer certain difficult questions. So in our own small way, we are contributing to this concept of strengthening our Malaysian youth leadership. Renewal is new life, youthful enthusiasm, effulgent energy. Where do we look for such energy? Where is it readily found? Why in the young people? Because to them everything is fresh and new. They are in the area of discovery, and with discovery comes the urge to share and explain their revelations. Many of the greatest Hindu teachers through the centuries did their most inspired work before the age of 30. Even in our monastery, we follow a tradition whereby it is the young swamis who do most of the teaching of the public, whereas you might think this better left to the older, more seasoned monastics. Find among you the young people who are in this stage of discovery and sharing. Bring them forward. Encourage them. Don't think they are too young, that only the elders should be allowed to lead. I know of inspired individuals in their teens who are filled with such enthusiasm and who can speak eloquently about their faith. The elders can and should demonstrate good leadership by sharing the lead with the youth. By your doing so, the peers of these bright souls will see that you are sincere. They will appreciate your wisdom and heed your guidance. When I say strengthen Hinduism, I do not imply force, opposition, or antagonism against other faiths or ways of life. Hinduism prides itself on its tolerance and respect for other traditions. Its cardinal principle is non-injuriousness, ahimsa. in thought, word, and deed. What is implied is that Hinduism is a full and complete religion, and when a Hindu fully appreciates the depth and beauty of his faith, he feels fulfilled, complete, and able to face the challenges of the world. Hinduism, rightly practiced and understood, creates wholesome individuals, families, and communities possessing a quiet strength and self-sufficiency that is health-giving and inspiring. A few years ago, I was present at the foundation-laying ceremony of a Hindu temple in Perth, Australia. And when my turn came to speak, I made a simple statement about the reason for building the temple. That attending a Hindu temple brings greater peace to the individual, greater harmony in the home, and greater tolerance in the community. Among the threats facing Hinduism is disinterest in religion altogether, due to total fascination with the material world, which, with the proliferation of computers, television, and other technology, becomes more and more intriguing every decade. Gurudeva spoke of bringing Hinduism into the technological age so that Hindus do not feel their faith is old-fashioned. We can do this more and more by showing how it is applicable in any age, he wrote. Quote, we have to bring Hinduism into the technological age. It has to be reiterated, re-edited, and re-explained. We must teach how the worship of Lord Ganesha can help people run their computer better, help them become a better typist, help them handle the stress and strain that come from dealing with traffic and coping with people of all kinds. Hinduism has to be retranslated, updated into this industrial and technological era. Who can do that? Only the intelligent older people like yourselves, intelligent older people, can take this on and help me in this reformation. And then we will together pass it on to the next generation. Soon the Hindus of all sects will become strong and proud of their religion. And in this regard, we are pleased to see that the Malaysia Hindu Sangam has recently established a website and now exists in cyberspace as well. Another threat is conversion to another religion. This is happening all over the world. It is important to distinguish between unethical and ethical conversion. Unethical conversion is based on force, allurements, or fraud. Ethical conversion is based on a true understanding of both religions, and after deep thought and comparison, finding out one is not in the religion of his true perspective on life, and joining the religion that is of his true perspective. It is interesting timing that the legislature of Tamil Nadu just a few months ago passed an anti-conversion bill which distinguishes between these two types of conversion. Chief Minister Jayalalitha said the legislation was not directed against any particular religion or minorities, but that there was no provision under the Indian Penal Code to prevent conversions, and therefore the government felt the need for a legislation to curb conversions through force and allurement. Those changing religion on their own volition will not be covered under this legislation, she said. Gurudeva had hopes for such a bill when he wrote in the year 2000, in India today, the problems of forced or deceitful conversions are so prevalent that the government is trying to pass a law to prohibit such tactics, like the laws that already exist in Nepal. We hope such legislation is passed not only in India, but wherever similar problems exist. A commentary by Swami Dayananda Saraswati on this legislation was also published. He stated, I welcome the promulgation of the ordinance by the government of Tamil Nadu to ban religious conversions by use of force or by allurements or by any fraudulent means. This is a long-awaited step, a step that ensures for the citizens of Tamil Nadu the most basic of human rights. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, adopted by General Assembly Resolution 217A, December 1948, holds in Article 18 that, quote, quote, "Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief," unquote. While the article endorses each person's right to change his or her religion, it does not in any way allow for another person to change a given person's religion. On the contrary, a systematic coercive effort to impose one's religion on another by use of force or by allurements or by any fraudulent means is a clear violation of this basic human right. The denigration of one's religion and the humiliation that accompanies the conversion experience are violations of the dignity ensured to every human being. With the conversion experience comes shame, isolation, deep personal conflict, and ultimately the seeds for discord. History testifies to the devastating loss of rich and diverse cultures, gone forever in the aftermath of religious conversion. I appeal to the political leadership of all other states in India to promulgate similar laws and make sure that all possibilities of religious conflict are avoided and the tradition of religious harmony in India is maintained. Gurudeva, in his book, How to Become a Hindu, shared many useful thoughts on conversion. In reply to the question, are there ethics and scruples controlling conversion from one religion to another, such as corporations have in moving a top executive from one company to another, Gurudeva states the following. Ethics must be established among all the religionists of the world. They must nurture an appreciation for each other, not merely a tolerance. Religious leaders, above all, must remain fair, just as doctors and lawyers have codes of ethics and do not slander one another to acquire the other's patients and clients, so too must religions. A certain protocol must be established. Permission must be granted from one's religious leaders, making for a graceful exit from one and entrance into another, just as a citizen formally changes his loyalty from one nation to another, legally and ethically. Gurudeva wisely outlined a pattern for ethical conversion that could apply to any religion and oversaw the conversion to Hinduism of many of his devotees following this pattern. The first step is the ethical conversion needs to be based upon a good intellectual understanding of both the religion one is entering and the religion one is leaving. Gurudeva suggests that after studying both religions, a point-counterpoint be written, in which the individual compares the major beliefs of both religions to demonstrate a thorough grasp of the similarities and differences. Step two occurs once the study phase is completed and is to personally meet with the religious leader of your current religion and explain to him why you are planning to convert, giving him the chance to try to talk you out of converting. Gurudeva also addresses the question of converting back to Hinduism. In reply to the question, is it true that Hindu leaders sometimes make overt efforts to proselytize and convert Jews, Muslims, and Christians? Gurudeva's answer, perhaps surprisingly, is yes, but only if they previously had a forced conversion from Hinduism through bribery, coercion, or financial and educational rewards. Gurudeva goes on to say that it takes three generations for the process of conversion to be complete. The child of the convert can be regarded as a settled, born member of the religion. Therefore, any such proselytizing would be focused on the first two generations, with a view to bring them back to the Hindu religion. If we neglect them, we are not caring for our brothers and sisters. This kind of proselytizing among our own we consider our duty, for it is educating the young and re-educating their parents, and it is not infringing on the other faiths who impose these unethical conversions. As you know, a Hindu Renaissance 5-point action plan has been created, which is jointly implemented by all the Hindu organizations and temples in Malaysia. The 5 points are: increasing religious knowledge, temples to serve as community centers, proactive social services, welfare services, and counseling services. Revival of Hindu cultural activities. Modernizing Hindu print and electronic media. We certainly support and pledge to do what we can in our small way to make this plan a grand success. In conclusion, let me share an inspiring quote that Gurudeva spoke of to thousands of Hindus around the world, stressing that they, in truth, had but one obligation. We have but one duty to perform, to pass our religion on to the next generation, the next, and the next. How is this done? Through Hindu education. We must educate our youth well. Our only hope lies in educating the children, the young minds which are open and eager to learn, but which are being enticed away from their heritage. Hold them close, protect them, love them dearly, and give them the treasures of Hinduism. That is the greatest gift you can offer them. Everything else will perish. Everything else will decay. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.